Welcome to episode 14 of the Chad New England podcast. I am Nick LaRocque here, and I am with my partner, as always, Ben Babcock, broadcasting with us under some difficult conditions tonight. How are you, man?
I'm doing good. Technical difficulties have prevented me from using my traditional headphone microphone setup, and instead I'll be podcasting tonight from a smartphone. I'll be attempting to keep the phone to my ear for an entire hour, which is probably something I haven't done since I was in one of my early relationships in freshman year of high school. So, you know, when you talk on the phone for like an hour, 2 hours every night, and then you break up a week later.
All right. So those of you listening, we apologize for this lack of sound quality, but you know, we had to make do with what we had, and we assure you that next week when we break down the week three lines, we will have remedied the microphone situation.
Regardless of sound quality, we're going to bring you quality breakdowns no matter what.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So why don't we start off just taking a few minutes each and talking about our team's performance this week before we hit the lines, just because I know most of our listeners are either Patriots fans or Giants fans. So do you want to just talk quickly about what you liked or didn't like or what you saw from the Patriots on Monday night?
Yeah, I guess briefly, the offense was obviously impressive. Brady put up 517 yards passing, pretty much controlled the game the entire time, going with the no huddle, forcing Miami's defenders to stay on the field for long periods of time. And you could tell those guys were completely gassed by the end of the game. So it really, you know, it really didn't seem like it was close at all, although Miami was able to move the ball pretty well. You know, one of the things that we're going to be focusing a lot on, or at least I will be this year, is how the Patriots defense does on third downs. They were one of the worst in the league last year. This week, they held Miami to 2 out of 14 third down conversions. Obviously, that means they were getting a lot of yards on first and second down because Henny threw for over 300. But overall, I would have to say it was a promising first game. Some good things on that defense, even with all the yards they gave up. And I like what I'm seeing so far.
Yeah, I was going to say that was my only reservation, because obviously, look, this New England offense is loaded. I think we all know that. But I think it was actually over 400 yards that Henny threw for. And so, you know, I guess
390, close.
Okay, but, right around 400. So it's, you know, I guess that's something you may have to be worried about. But this was a shootout, and obviously there was a point, I think, after Wes Welker's 99-yard touchdown where the Dolphins were suddenly having to play catch-up. Good, and what about, I was really impressed with Nate Solder. When I texted you about it, you seemed a little bit less enthusiastic. I thought he was doing a really good job against Cameron Wake.
Yeah, I guess it was guarded enthusiasm on my part. Going up against Cameron Wake is a tough assignment for a rookie. It's a tough assignment for a veteran player, let alone a guy who's making his first career start in the NFL. But I mean, he showed all the tools and capabilities of a number one tackle in this league. And you know, a lot of people are questioning if there's going to be, you know, any kind of controversy now when Vollmer comes back, who is out this week, who is the number one right tackle. And you know, I think Vollmer will take his spot back when he comes back. He's proven himself over the last couple of years, and in my opinion, it's going to be White, who's playing left tackle right now, who's going to be replaced by Solder before Vollmer will be. I was thinking that White wouldn't even be here this year, so I think he's just kind of holding the spot for him. It's clear that he's a legit player, and he's got a lot of talent and a lot of ability. I don't think you could be happier with the first performance for an offensive lineman. I mean, I think he only gave up one sack, maybe a couple hurries. So a lot of positive things from the first week, and, you know, look forward to seeing him play again. You know, I think it's going to be a long road. It's kind of a thankless position, you know, as you know. A lot of the good players will be swept under the rug and will end up just seeing the highlights of the sacks he does give up. But I was really impressed. I got to say that. If it didn't come off that way, I guess I'm just trying not to jinx anything.
Yeah, I believe what you said was pretty good, but not perfect.
Well, you know, I have the luxury of being that kind of a stickler as the guy sitting on the couch watching the game. But, you know, I kind of felt like as soon as I said, yeah, he's doing awesome, that Wake was going to come around the edge and break Brady's kneecap, you know, on play. So maybe a little bit of superstition on my part. Now, in hindsight, the Wednesday after the game, that was a pretty great performance by him.
Do you want to hear what I think about the Giants?
I guess if it's not going to be too profanity laden.
Well, this is really the first day of the week that I'm able to talk publicly about it. You know, I'm sure you feel the same way. To me, these division rival games are, I almost feel as strongly about them as I did about my own games when I was in high school and playing rival teams. I get really excited for them. And, you know, when it's the Cowboys or the Eagles, I expect that we're going to split with them. But, you know, when it's the Redskins, particularly the way they are right now, and it's a game that you're expecting to win, and then you don't, it's just really tough to swallow. So I've had a rough couple of days since then, but I guess just a few issues I saw. Number one, you know, I guess the Giants did an okay job getting to the quarterback. Pierre Paul had two sacks and a forced fumble. Tollefson had a sack. Chris Canty had a sack. But really, when you talk about the Giants' defensive line and getting to the quarterback, and then you talk about taking Justin Tuck and Osi Ugbunyora off that line, I don't care what the stats say. It's just not the same kind of pressure that they're usually going to generate. So I think Rex Grossman looked way too comfortable for stretches. I think the pressure was inconsistent. I think there were times when they got to him, particularly early in the game. But then I think there were also long stretches where he was able to be pretty comfortable in the pocket. Next big issue, a lot of injuries in the secondary. Obviously, Terrell Thomas is the one everyone talks about, but a lot of their depth there is lacking. And guys are having to take on new roles. Antrell Roll is having to play in the slot. And so they played a lot of zone, and they really did a poor job with that. I mean, they were leaving those Redskins receivers with huge, huge cushions. They weren't jamming tight ends off the line. And I really have to question the coaching staff on both sides of the ball because, you know, I know this is Rex Grossman and people joke about him, but the guy's got a winning record in his career as a starter in the NFL. The guy has taken a team to the Super Bowl. To me, it wasn't really...
He looked legit, man. He looked legit in that game. He made a lot of good throws.
Yeah, and it's not surprising to me that he was able to sit back and pick apart that soft zone, right? Like, to me, a veteran quarterback who we know is a smart player, who we know has been in the league a long time, it seems to me like the worst thing you can do is play a soft zone like that and just let him sit back and pick it apart. To me, the real weakness of the Redskins is how bad their receiving core is. To me, it would have been better to get up, get in guys' face, play a more aggressive style. And, you know, because those receivers are really bad, and it's disgraceful that they were able to have that kind of day, over 300 yards throwing for Grossman. But I'm not too worried about the defensive end because Tuck's going to be back Monday night. OC will be back in a few weeks. And I think a lot of the issues in the secondary were communication issues that are sort of stemming from the fact that they're having to adjust on the fly with all these injuries. So I think that side of the ball will be okay. Offensively is where I'm really worried. The line did not look good. Eli, in the whole second half, was running for his life. He never was able to get comfortable. Even the long pass play he had to Nix in the first half was the result of him having to step up and get away from pressure. And I would just say that they averaged, they were running the ball at over 5 yards a carry in the first half. Second half, they really went away from the run. Jacobs only got 6 carries, even though he rushed for 29 yards, so almost 5 yards a carry. And, to me, they just really, on offense, got away from what they did. So I'm questioning the coaching staff sort of on both sides of the ball, but I'm hoping Monday night St. Louis is banged up also that we can right this ship a little bit.
Yeah, I was surprised by the way that the offense played, and I guess by the play calling as well, because it seemed to me with the defense so banged up, you would have really wanted to grind it out with Bradshaw and Jacobs trying to control the clock. But it didn't seem like they were able to find any rhythm whatsoever. And like you wrote in your article, you know, at the times when they did need to go back to the running game and short yards and stuff like that, there was no fluidity there at all. It was completely unsuccessful. And how much is the loss of a guy like Steve Smith? Granted, he would have been hurt anyway. But a receiver like that, you know, a possession receiver, a guy who's kind of the safety blanket for Manning, and the loss of a guy like Kevin Boss, a good receiving tight end. I mean, how much of a role do you think that played in the dysfunction of the offense?
I think there's certainly factors. But again, to me, the biggest issue was the fact that, to me, again, it was play calling. I mean, you're talking about 19 carries between Jacobs and Bradshaw combined, not even 20 carries. To me, that makes no sense. To me, the Giants have two really good, really effective receivers. And like you said, there are big question marks at third receiver, and there were some drops from Victor Cruz. There are big question marks at tight end. They only converted one first down all day. And to me, what that means, we've got two studs at receiver and then question marks everywhere else in the passing game. To me, that means that makes the run all the more important. You know, Tim Hightower only averaged 2.5 yards per carry in that game, but the Redskins did not go away from him. They kept pounding the ball with him, and I think that really helped set up their passing game. It just seemed like the Giants were getting away from what they do well offensively. And I think if they are a run-first team and they don't depart from that this passing game can still be effective.
Okay, let me just ask you one more question. Is Eli Manning in a class with Tom Brady?
You know, I'm not really interested in comparing my quarterback to other quarterbacks. I'm just worried
about... There you go. Now you got it, man. You know how to answer the question. All right, just checking.
I'm just worried about how he can help my team win.
That's a good answer. That's a good answer. And, well, on that note, let's move to the week two lines. Do you want to just recap how we did last week? It was hit or miss, really. I mean, I feel like we called some games well, and other games we were just completely way off on. I was 8-7-1 with my pick, and yeah, I have you here as 6-9-1. So not an outstanding first week by any stretch of the imagination, but, something to build on, I guess. We can go up from here.
I would just like to quickly, obviously I didn't have a very good week, 6-9-1. I would just like to, and I know you didn't disagree with me, so maybe we both can, but I had a lot of people in person who were telling me that I was completely wrong and crazy about Cam Newton. And I would just like to say, so far, I think we're pretty right about him. This guy is a stud, I think. But we can talk about that more when we get to Carolina.
Yeah, I would agree. So let's jump into week two lines. Let's see what we got.
All right. Do you want me to read the games or do you want to read them?
Why don't you read them this week if you got them in front of you?
I do. And should we, since we're having these audio issues, do you want to just, we'll run through the lines and then maybe we'll hold the email till next week?
Yeah, that'll work.
All right, perfect. So we've got the Saints hosting the Bears this weekend. Saints are giving 6.5 to Chicago.
Wow. My instincts tell me to take the Saints straight up, but after that Bears performance in week 1 against Atlanta, I am a little bit hesitant to do that. But, the Saints had a tough first draw with Green Bay, who came out flying. And I can't really see the Saints going down 0-2, losing the first two games of the season. So I'm going to take the Saints here, win by a touchdown.
All right. I'm also going to take the Saints. I have no faith in Chicago, and obviously that was why I picked Atlanta last week. And Chicago, they played great, but my experience with them is that some weeks that happens and some weeks that doesn't happen. a lot of it, again, is big plays off of turnovers, big plays in special teams. Devin Hester ripping off a couple really long receptions. And to me, it never feels like the kind of consistent play that I can hang my hat on. And like you said, I can't picture this Saints team at 0-2. So I'm going to be with you on the Saints. Next game, we've got Detroit. Big favorites in a home game position this team has not been in some time. They are giving 8.5 to the visiting Kansas City Chiefs.
Wow. That is a big line. I do like this Lions team a lot, and KC just totally got dominated at home by the Bills, which was a game I did pick Buffalo, but I didn't think it was going to be, 41-7 ass-kicking. I'm gonna take the Chiefs here. I still think Detroit is gonna win this game, but I don't think it's gonna be a 9-point victory. Maybe a touchdown. I think KC is gonna bounce back a little bit. They got a lot of talented players in KC. I think that first game was kind of a fluke.
All right, so you're taking the Chiefs. I'm gonna go with the Lions on this one. Just really impressed with them last week. They were far beyond where I expected them to be, and I expect them to be pretty good. If they can stay healthy, I think that they're really going to be a force this year. And Eric Berry is just such a big loss for the Chiefs. He's lost for the year now. And I think,
that's brutal.
That passing game that Detroit has, that's going to really that's going to make it an even tougher matchup for the Chiefs. And, Kansas City's on the road here. Obviously, they're traditionally a much better home team, although that didn't show last week. So I'm going to go with Detroit at -8.5. So that's our first disagreement. We actually disagreed on a lot last week. I forgot about that.
We did. I was just looking down the list, and like right in the heart of the order, five or six games in a row we picked differently. But that's good. Freedom of speech, freedom of gambling, of talking about gambling. It's America.
That's right. All right, next, the New York Jets playing at home, hosting Jacksonville, giving 9.5.
Oh, I hate to take this Jets team, and let me just tell you how fucking miserable it was to watch Dallas blow this game on Thursday night, Sunday night. Dude, there's like nothing better that I like, than watching the Jets lose a game. It's second only to the Patriots winning. But 9.5 points to Jacksonville, who just came off a win in Tennessee. I'm going to take the Jets. Strictly for the fact that I'm hopefully a little reverse jinx action here.
All right. I'm also going to take the Jets. I had mixed feelings. At the end of the day, I was really happy.
Obviously, you would have preferred for the Cowboys to lose as a division rival.
Right. So that was
both insane.
Right. So the most important thing to me was that the Cowboys lost and Tony Romo blew it. And that's reassuring. That really restored my faith in humanity after what had happened to the Giants. But I could have done, it's been an emotional roller coaster ride with me in terms of this whole Plaxico Burress situation. And when this most recent article came out last Friday and he was saying a lot of negative things about Tom Coughlin, negative things about Eli Manning, quotes like, I make too much money to be spoken to like that. I'm finally just washing my hands of him. I'm done with him. And so to see him catch that long touchdown was, it was an interesting feeling because I was really happy that the Cowboys were going to end up losing. But, I'm not going to be able to help but root against that guy this year. But I think the Jets are really good. I actually think they're better than what they showed on Sunday night. And I feel the opposite way about the Jaguars. So I'm going to take them at 9.5. I could easily see this being a 10-point game or a 17-point game.
Okay.
Next, Buffalo Bills, undefeated at the moment, giving 3.5 to the visiting, also undefeated Oakland Raiders.
Wow. This game actually could be a pretty good game, and it's somewhat intriguing now given the fact that both these teams are coming off big wins. I'm taking Oakland here. Actually, you know what? Scratch that. I can't take Oakland here. I got to take Buffalo because I really like Fitzpatrick. I think he's a good quarterback. He put up a huge game down in Kansas City, and I'm going to have to go with him over Gradkowski or whoever else is out there in Oakland
Campbell.
Right now. Campbell, yeah. So I'm taking Fitzpatrick here. I think Buffalo's got a little positive momentum here for about the first time in 13 years. So I'm going to ride with the hot hand here.
All right, I'm going Buffalo also. 3.5 is, to me, a pretty reasonable line. And if you're Oakland, you played the late game Monday night on the road, had to travel home. Now you're traveling across the country to Buffalo, playing the early game on Sunday. I don't know. That's a big red flag. So I'm going to go with the Bills.
And staying in Buffalo, that's a bummer too. You know,
That's true.
Of all the places to travel to, I just stayed there a couple weeks ago, and besides from being the birthplace of the Buffalo Wing, I can't say there's much redeeming about the place as a city. Just didn't really do it for me.
Well, it's certainly a lot safer than Oakland, so at least it has that going for it.
Fair enough.
All right, next game, we've got the Cardinals traveling to Washington, where they're going to be getting 4 points from the Redskins.
Getting 4 points from the Redskins, huh? I'm taking Arizona here. I still don't really like this Washington team. As good as Grossman played, it just still feels like a fluky win to me. So I'm taking Arizona.
All right, I'm going to go with the Redskins here for a few reasons. One being that just like the Giants' secondary was banged up and not very good last week, Arizona's secondary is pretty terrible, as we saw last week. I mean, whether he's really good or not, a rookie quarterback in his first game should not be carving up your defense for over 400 yards. And so I can only imagine what a veteran like Grossman is going to do to them. And then on top of that, I'm not a huge fan of the West Coast team heading over to the East Coast. And finally, I read this, and this is, you know, you can say that this is meaningless, and maybe it is, but the Washington players were given the day off Monday after their win, which is pretty standard in the NFL, and all the players vetoed it, led by London Fletcher, and decided they wanted to come in on Monday and work and practice. And it just seems like there's a real positive vibe in Washington right now. People seem like they believe in Grossman. People seem really bought in to what Mike Shanahan's doing. People seem to really believe right now, and you know, that has to be such a refreshing change for the people who have been in that organization for the past few years. How long it's going to last, you know, it's hard to know. It could be, you know, week 5, we're back to the status quo. But at least for right now, against another team that sucks pretty badly, I'm going to take the Redskins at -4.
Well, you know, I see what you're saying. Things, they're riding high there, you know. They're undefeated right now. The season's off to a good start. But I got news for Redskins fans out there. This is going to be a year just like all the others. They can enjoy this one win now, and they can practice on Monday, but I'm pretty sure that the rest of the season is going to really suck. So I guarantee they'll lose a game or two. They won't be practicing on Monday. They'll be hanging out, playing Madden, watching reruns of the Keeping Up with the Kardashians.
Hoping that a little bit of the effect might rub off on them.
Hey, you know, they're all spoken for now, so you're going to have to wait like 4 or 5 years till the Jenner's daughters there come of age.
All right.
Anyway, moving along.
All right. Next, Baltimore coming off maybe the biggest win of the weekend. Two of my good friends who are coworkers, one's a Steelers fan and the other's a Broncos fan, so it's been a rough week for us at work. We all had bad losses to hated division rivals. But Baltimore is heading to Tennessee, and they're going to be given 6 points on the road to the Titans.
That doesn't seem like enough, even on the road. That was an impressive win. I watched most of that game, and Baltimore just seemed to be in another class than Pittsburgh, and it was totally shocking given how much experience Pittsburgh has. Not a good sign for the Steelers, 7 turnovers, and I really like what I saw out of the Ravens' offense. I thought Flacco looked really good, Rice looked really good, and the defense was great. Reed had 2 interceptions back there, so I'm taking Baltimore here.
All right, I am taking the Ravens as well. I think you just pretty much said everything I want to say. I'm going Baltimore too. Yeah. All right, next one. This is a big line, so be ready. We've got Pittsburgh coming off a really bad loss at home hosting the Seahawks. Pittsburgh, even though they are currently winless, giving 14.5 to the Seahawks.
14.5.
Yeah.
That is a huge line for a team that just got smoked. Seattle, it's got to be a little bit insulting as far as they're concerned. I mean, I certainly don't see Pittsburgh turning it over 7 times, but I didn't see anything that leads me to believe that they're capable of putting up, you know, a 2-3 touchdown win, which is what this line is essentially suggesting, 17-point victory. I'm going to take Seattle to cover. I don't think Pittsburgh's going to lose this game, but that line's just too big for me.
All right. I'm going to take Pittsburgh. I like them to bounce back this week. I like them at home. I wouldn't lay it down on this, but that's what I'm picking. I'm picking Pittsburgh. I have that little faith in Tarvaris Jackson. All right. Next game, we've got the Carolina Panthers hosting the Packers. Packers are given 10 here to the Panthers.
I'm taking Green Bay. I think they're probably the best, most complete team in the NFL right now. And Carolina, I think Newton did a lot of good things in that game. A couple huge plays. I don't think Green Bay is going to give those up, and I think they're going to put a lot more pressure on him, show him some things that he maybe didn't see in week 1. So I'm taking Green Bay here.
All right, I obviously could end up being wrong like I was about 9 of the games last week, but I'm taking Carolina, against the points, not to win the game. But I think 10 is pretty big. I think that Carolina's got the weapons. Steve Smith looked really healthy, really good last week. And I think that this is a team that it's going to maybe be difficult to run the score up on. I think that in garbage time that they're going to have Newton airing it out. And I see Green Bay winning this. I don't necessarily know that I see them winning it by 10. Hmm. All right. Was that a doubtful?
Yeah, I think I feel like Green Bay puts so much pressure on the quarterback with the pass rush. They've got a great secondary. A great cornerback in Charles Woodson. I feel like this might be a game where Newton comes back down to earth, has a couple turnovers, throws a couple interceptions, and, I mean, they're going to kind of be playing from behind, I would think. Green Bay's offense is so powerful. Rodgers is playing at such a high level. I think this one's going to get away from Carolina. He played so well in that first week. I just feel like there has to be, you know, he's still a rookie. It's still his second game in the NFL. Now they've got some tape on him. Green Bay's going to do some things to mix it up, whether it's disguising coverages or exotic blitzes or something like that. I feel like this is going to be kind of a coming back down to earth for Newton and the Panthers. So that's why I think, 10 points is a good chunk of yardage, good chunk of points there. So But I'm pretty confident in that one, actually. We'll have to wait and see how it shakes out, but,
yeah, I think I'm on the Newton train, although I agree with you. He's bound to have some really abysmal games this year, and this could certainly be one of them. But and Carolina just lost John Beeson for the year. So, but, you know, I don't know why. At home, for some reason, I just feel like they're going to make it close. But
a lot of Achilles injuries this year, it seems like.
Yeah, man, people are going down like crazy. Half of that.
I can never remember anything like it, but it seems like there's been like 10 or 11 guys that have gone down in the preseason in the first week with that injury, which is not very common.
Yeah, you know, I'd be interested to know if they think the shortened preseason had anything to do with it, although that doesn't really seem like it would make sense to me. But anyways, who knows? If there are any doctors out there listening, let us know.
Yeah.
All right, next, the Vikings are at home against the Buccaneers. Vikings are giving 3 to Tampa. I can't believe, by the way, I think I got this one right by a half a point last week. I was siding with Minnesota. I thought they were going to play a whole lot better than they did. I can't believe that the Chargers didn't cover.
Yeah, you did cover by the skin of your teeth in that game. And, you know, Minnesota only mustered 28 yards passing or something like that, 38 yards passing.
39 yards passing for McNabb, and yet they score 17 points.
It blows my mind. I thought it was a joke. I was looking through the team statistics to track down some stuff on the Patriots, and I saw that number up at the top, and it was like, you got to be kidding me. I guess if you have Adrian Peterson and you can stir up some points on special teams or defense or something, but 39 yards, that's – and Rex Grossman threw for over 300. Go figure. Anyway, I'm going to take Tampa Bay in this game. Because, you know, they're a solid team. Tough loss the first week, but I think they bounce back. If Minnesota's not going to get anything else out of the passing game, teams are just going to stack the box against Peterson, and they're not going to be able to do anything on offense. So I'm going to take the Bucs in this game.
Yeah, I'm going with Tampa Bay also. I expected Minnesota to look a little bit better, like I said, and you know, people were saying for these teams, particularly the ones with new quarterbacks, it's going to take a little while because of the shortened preseason. And I guess I was trying not to let that stuff sway my opinions too much, but they really looked like they're not all on the same page right now. They didn't look good. That game was nowhere near as close as the score would indicate, so I'm going to go with Tampa Bay on the road also. Next game we've got the Cleveland Browns, who failed to knock off the Bengals on Sunday, giving 2.5 points to the Indianapolis Colts, who I predicted would not be beaten by 8.5 points by the Texans, but who instead were down 34-0 at halftime. Sorry.
That was a very demoralizing loss for Indianapolis. And I'm taking Cleveland here because Indy looks like they're a few weeks away from even putting together a decent outing, let alone, doing much better than they did the first week. I think the Cleveland's they got a tough defense. They got a good, solid offense. Cleveland can run the ball, and Indianapolis got totally destroyed on the ground. Houston pretty much just came out and ran the ball down their throats that whole half, and Indy just couldn't stop it. So I'm taking the Browns here. I think they're a big physical team. Indy really doesn't have an identity right now, and the more of these big, brutal losses that they take, I think the harder things are going to be for them to kind of right the ship down there. There's got to be a lot of players in that locker room just kind of shaking their head and feeling like it's a lost season because Manning went down, knowing how important he is to that team. So you could see a lot of ugly games that Indianapolis is here. And Kerry Collins looks like he's about 75 years old.
Yeah, it's too bad because I love him, but it wasn't pretty. And I got to say this, man, I'm taking Cleveland as well. I told you last week I thought Cincinnati was a little bit better than people gave them credit for. So I think Cleveland is definitely a better team than Indianapolis right now. But I just want to say, so you're a Patriots fan and I'm a Giants fan, two teams that always seem to make sure they have a good player at backup quarterback. And certainly that paid off for the Patriots couple years ago when Tom Brady went down. I know you guys missed the playoffs, but I believe you finished 11-5.
We did, yeah.
And it's unfathomable that there's no answer if this guy is down. And I'm in the minority here, but I love Michael Irvin as an analyst. And on Sunday, I watched the pregame show on NFL Network instead of the one on ESPN because Michael Irvin is on it. And he was saying that. He was saying it's inexcusable. You know, if Tom Brady went down right now, the Patriots, they'd be all set. You know, if Eli Manning went down, David Carr could step in. Why don't they have somebody? And all these people at the desk were saying, well, Michael, you know, nobody else can do it like Peyton Manning. There's nobody else who would be able to step in and run that offense. And he was like, everybody stop talking. And he was pissed and he said, stop acting like you can't teach anybody else to run this offense. And you can't teach anybody else, you know, how to play this game at a reasonable level. And I think he's right. I think, you know, I mean, think about it, particularly coming into the season knowing that he had these neck issues. Because he was talking about these neck issues during the lockout, complaining that he wasn't able to see the Colts doctors. And so it's, you know, I don't know. To me, that seems like poor planning. And to me, if I'm an Indy fan, I'd be really pissed at the front office right now.
It's terrible, terrible planning. They've basically thrown the season away. And, you know, you brought up the Patriots example where Brady went down for the season in the first week and they had a guy in-house in the organization that they brought up. And granted, he certainly didn't have the mastery of the offense that Tom Brady did, didn't have the freedom to go out and change plays at the line the way that Brady did. But he was a guy who knew the system, at least, you know, fairly well, and was already with the team. And you just see that, you know, Indy had to go out and sign Kerry Collins off the beach somewhere to come in and play quarterback for him. Certainly not a vote of confidence for Curtis Painter, who didn't play very well in the preseason either. But you have to be considering your contingency plan when your whole offense and your whole franchise rides on the back of one guy. And Irvin's exactly right. You know, if you've had a guy on your team for 2 or 3 years and you can't teach him how to run at least some of the offense the way that Peyton Manning does, then that's a problem. That's a personnel problem, and you need to get somebody in there who can do it, because you have to have somebody available and knowledgeable enough to step in and keep things moving. Nobody's going to play at the same level as Peyton Manning's going to play, with the exception of a few guys in the NFL. Certainly not a lot of backups, but you need to have somebody there, and you know, you have to question what they were doing in the draft the last 3 or 4 years. Manning and Brady are both guys that, you know, they're heading towards the twilight of their careers. If you're not preparing for their succession now, when you get to that point where they're either hurt all the time because of age and injuries, or they're going to retirement, you're either going to get screwed with a first-year quarterback who is going to have to come in and learn on the fly, or you're overpaying for a free agent on the open market. And the way to do it, the way the successful teams would do it, the way they did it in Green Bay when Favre left, the way that New England was able to bring Matt Castle along, turn him into a franchise quarterback, you have to build these guys in-house if you want to have any kind of continuity with your franchise, if you want to have any kind of hope to continue a season when your number one guy goes down. I mean, just make it respectable. And it remains to be seen whether Indianapolis has got the balls to stand up and say, you know, we're not going to just roll over and die here. That's pretty much what they did in the first week. So all around, I mean, we're talking about a potential career-threatening injury right now. Where does Indianapolis go from here if Manning is indeed done? I mean,
yeah, and like, you know, it's literally, if he is done, then there's a chance that this franchise could be looking at a few years of really, really bad teams because they've neglected this. And now, look, I agree with you totally. They should have had somebody who they had brought up through the franchise. They should have had somebody going into this season who had been there, who they were confident could do the job. But even if they weren't, you know, like I said, Manning's neck was being talked about before the lockout even ended. There are other options. I mean, when you look at the other guys out there, David Carr was signed by the Giants. That's the direction they could have gone. you know, fuck, call up the Bengals and say, hey, what do you want for Carson Palmer? Peyton Manning is injured. You know, because obviously the Bengals are saying they won't trade him. That doesn't mean that you can't call them and make offers. Do something. I mean, this Kerry Collins thing, it just feels like this happened. They did this, like, last-minute thing that they clearly hadn't been thinking about, and now they seem content to throw their hands in the air and say, well, what do you want from us? You know, we have one of the best quarterbacks in the league, and he's out. Of course we're going to suck. And it just doesn't have to be that way. And you know, they might luck out. If they really suck and they really are the worst team in the league this year, then they could end up with Andrew Luck. And from everything that I've seen, he has a shot to be a real player in the NFL. But, you know, if that doesn't happen, who knows what the future holds for this team?
No. We'll have to watch and see if they start tanking games. Maybe that's their whole strategy. We'll have to wait and see.
Maybe. And I just, two last things I'll say is, one, if I'm Peyton Manning and this really is, you know, damage to my spinal cord and I really have made, you know, this much money, particularly with endorsements, you know, in addition to my salary, I'd have to consider walking away. I really, really would, you know, when you're just talking about the quality of the rest of your life. And the second thing I'll say is just to reiterate, I love Michael Irvin as an analyst and I'm not sure why so many people don't. Okay.
Right on.
Are you glad I said that stuff? All right. Let's move on.
I'm really glad you said that.
All right. The 49ers hosting the Dallas Cowboys. Niners are giving 3.
San Fran had a big win in week 1. And Romo just looked so terrible in much of the second half there. Really just kind of running all around. Doesn't look very confident in the pocket. I'm going to take the Niners here.
All right. I'm taking the Niners as well. You know, I don't know. Look, I don't know. There's something about this Dallas team that I'm just not buying. And I wasn't buying it at any point Sunday night, even though Romo did look great at the start of the game. And I like the Niners this year, man. I mean, granted, that game was, you know, I don't think we can count on Ted Ginn running back a kick and a punt for touchdowns. But I don't know. I feel pretty good about the Niners, and I'm just not buying Dallas. So I'm going to take the Niners at home at given 3.
What kind of a leash do they have on Tony Romo in Dallas?
None, man. Jerry Jones loves him. Jerry Jones thinks that I've seen videotaped interviews. Even Jerry Jones came out today and said that Romo, I forget the adjective he used, but it was like some over-the-top positive adjective, like Romo was marvelous or something like that in the game. So it's, you know, I think Jerry Jones is calling all the shots, and I don't think a coach would be able to bench him, you know, without Jerry Jones' approval. And then look, Romo, I love to rip on him, and I don't like him, and certainly he's blown a lot of games, particularly big primetime games. You know, but it is, to me, it does speak to a larger team issue as well.
Fair enough.
All right, Houston giving 3 at Miami.
I am going to take Houston. Miami, you know, they put up some big numbers, granted, in the game against New England, but I'm not really buying them as a complete package. I think Houston's got so many weapons on that offense. Their defense is better than it's ever been right now. I'm going to take Houston in this game.
All right, I'm taking the Texans as well. You know, I told you last week I'm not sold on the Dolphins. And, you know, I'm not, even after last week, I'm not sold on them. I think a lot of times when division rivals hook up, you can't read too much into it. So even though they looked okay against the Patriots at times, I feel like they always look a little bit better than they are when they play the Patriots. So next game, we've got the Patriots at home giving 7 to San Diego. I know you want to win this one big.
Oh, I hate Philip Rivers so much, and there's been no greater joy in the last 5 or 6 years than watching the Patriots continually beat the Chargers, either in a big game in the regular season or in the playoffs. So I'm going to take the Patriots. They have an incredible record of covering the spread over the last couple of years, and San Diego, granted, has got a great defense. They put a lot of pressure on the quarterback, but it doesn't really faze me that much. I don't think that San Diego's running game, you know, granted, if you can slow down Tolbert, he was basically their entire offense in week one, 2 receiving touchdowns, 1 rushing touchdown. If you can slow down that guy, which I think we have the horses up front to do that, I don't know how effective this offense is. So I'm taking New England, getting 7 at home, and I'm hoping it's a 30-point victory.
All right, I'm taking New England too, and I share all those sentiments. I even, in our fantasy league that we're in, I had the auto draft, and I ended up with Philip Rivers, and first thing I did was post a league message saying, if anybody wants Philip Rivers, make me a deal, because I can't. I'm in the same boat with you. There's something about him that just drives me insane.
He's running the wrong way, right? He's just not likable in any way.
Yeah.
I thought about maybe, you know, the old standard draft strategy I have for fantasy leagues that I'm in with you is to always try and draft Eli Manning and then trade him to for your best player. But I think that probably only worked once in this lifetime when I traded you Eli for Chris Johnson straight up and went on to win the league. But it always sticks in the back of my mind as a potential strategy.
Yeah, well, luckily, I got Eli in this league, ever since you trade rate me and got Chris Johnson, I can see that maneuver coming a mile away. So, all right, 3 more games. Next game, we've got Denver is hosting Cincinnati, and the Broncos are giving 4.5.
I'm going to have to go with Cincinnati.
Me too, man. That's surprising. I thought we might differ on this one. I'm going with the Bengals also. I told you last week I thought they were better than people think, and Sunday only confirmed that for me. And Gronkowski is going to be playing quarterback for them now after that injury to Dalton, and I think that that can only help them. So we're both on Cincy.
Yeah, he's been solid. He's been a solid player. You know, I guess I'm going to jump on the bandwagon with you, I mean, after that performance.
And I'm actually going to make the prediction right now.
What's the spread?
4.5.
4.5. Denver is giving 4.5?
Denver is giving 4.5, yep. So my prediction here, and it doesn't seem that bold, except that so many people thought the Bengals would be the worst team. My prediction is that of the 4 games they play against the Steelers and Ravens, they will win 1. I'm not sure which one it will be. I'm not sure if they'll be home or away. I'm not sure if it will be the Steelers or the Ravens, but they will win 1 of those games, and that is my prediction.
All right, I'm writing that down.
All right.
I'm going to hold you to it.
All right, using the same spiral notebook?
Oh, yeah.
Good. All right, Sunday night, we've got the Eagles heading to Atlanta. Philly is giving 2.5 on the road.
I'm taking Philadelphia in this. That's a small spread considering how they won their game and Atlanta lost theirs last week. Atlanta is probably looking to bounce back. I don't know if they can play any worse necessarily than they did in that loss to the Bears. Just look totally, totally useless on offense, which is surprising because they looked really explosive during the preseason. But I'm going to take the Eagles here.
All right, I'm going to take the Eagles too, as much as it kills me. I watched that whole Eagles-Rams game, and the Eagles, they looked really impressive. The Rams were sending the house at Michael Vick all game long, really putting a lot of pressure on him. And, they did force some mistakes, but overall I thought he dealt with it really well. He rushed for 100 yards. He looked pretty sharp. He had one play, I want to say it was in the third quarter maybe, where he had a run to his left, and he made a beautiful touchdown pass to DeSean Jackson. And Atlanta, you know, I picked them very quickly last week, and that was not because I think they're really good. I'm not sold on Matt Ryan. I certainly don't think Atlanta's as good as their record last year. That had more to do with the fact that I'm not a believer in the Bears. Philly, to me, is clearly the better team in this, and I agree with you. I think 2.5 is a very small line.
All right.
Monday night. My New York Giants hosting the St. Louis Rams, who suffered a whole slew of injuries last Sunday. Giants are giving the Rams 4.5 points.
I'm going to take St. Louis here. Although, did you say that Tuck was going to be back this game?
Tuck is definitely playing. The only thing is, so the internet was down at my work today, so I haven't been able to check, but last I knew yesterday, Hakeem Nicks had suffered a bone bruise, and it wasn't any long-term damage, but there was a small chance that could affect him this week, but I'm going to assume he's going to play.
Okay. Now you got me thinking. I flip-flop on the Buffalo-Oakland game after my initial reaction. And now I don't know whether to go with my gut with St. Louis or go with the Giants. I'm going to stick to St. Louis on this one because of what I saw. I need the Giants to prove to me that they can get their asses on offense, at least with the play calling. And, you know, once – yeah.
All right. We're finishing up at the right time. I'm having a hard time understanding you. You sound like one of those auto-tuned over fuzzy vocals in an R&B song or whatever the kids listen to these days.
That's what I'm going for.
All right, I'm going to take the
chat. I can tell you right now. I can tell you that my phone right now is so hot that I could literally pan sear a pork chop on it. I don't know if you're supposed to use Skype on a cell phone for like an hour.
Well, I appreciate you powering through that. So the Giants are given 4.5. I'm going to take them. I think they're a whole lot better than they are last week. I think this is a group that that is really unhappy with the way they played last week. I think the secondary is going to be really shored up. St. Louis is without Steven Jackson, so they're going to be relying on Cadillac Williams, who actually performed pretty well Sunday. They lost Danny Amendola. Sam Bradford is a little bit banged up. I think Justin Tuck back is such a huge difference. I mean, this is a guy, again, I'll say it, who the scouts regard as the best defensive end in the NFL. I think that they're going to put a ton of pressure on Bradford, and I think the Giants are going to win this one, and all the Giants fans are going to end up feeling good and positive, and it's going to be a new day come next Tuesday morning.
A new day is dawning, huh?
That's right.
There we go. We got the lines in.
I'm going to throw a teaser at you. How do you feel about that?
I feel good. Can you hear me now, or am I still doing the auto-tune thing? This thing might melt in my hand.
No, you're doing way better. You're doing way better now. All right, so we've got the lines I like the best are, so you got Jets -9.5 against Jacksonville, Ravens -6 against Tennessee, and then it's tough for me to decide who to throw in as my third team, the Patriots or the Texans. I ended up going with Houston. So I like Jets, Ravens, and Texans in a three-team teaser this weekend.
Jets, Ravens, Texans. Let's see. I would also take Baltimore. I would throw in New Orleans. And I would throw in I would throw in Seattle to get 20.5 against Pittsburgh.
All right. So we both agree on Baltimore. I'm going Jets, Texans. You're going Saints and Seahawks.
Yes.
All right. Well, man, listen, I appreciate you fighting through these issues.
We'll get it wrapped up. I'll invest in a new microphone at some point between now and next Wednesday.
Very good. So, listeners at home, next week Babcock's voice will be more clear and, I guess just more clear than it ever has been.
Twice as awesome.
It was about to be that time anyways. Your old microphone was pretty old.
It was, man. It's I don't know what I'm going to do with it. I might put it in my shed. I think when you buy a house and you maybe you have a shed, you'll find that that's where all of the things that have sentimental value to you but are despised by your wife, they all end up in there, hanging from a nail on the wall. So maybe I'll throw the old headphones in there along with all of my other things that I own.
All right, that sounds good. Hey, man, I enjoy the rest of the week, and I'm sure we'll be communicating with each other on Sunday.
All right, man. I will talk to you soon.
All right, take it easy.